Are we the snowflake generation? Is romance dead? Is social media turning our brains to mush? Is chivalry sexist? Welcome to 20s Questions. I'm Francesca McClement. I'll be talking to young people from different countries, continents, and backgrounds about what it's like to be a young person in this day and age. My first guest is Chelsea Owen. Thank you very much for joining me on my first episode, Chelsea.
My pleasure, Francie.
Not that you really had a choice though, did you?
I did not.
Well, I'm very, very pleased to have you here. And yeah, so let's get started. So we moved to Padua together. Padua is in northern Italy. It's about a half an hour train ride from Venice. And we moved here in September. I sort of followed you here though, didn't I?
Kinda, but I don't think I would have come if you hadn't come.
Really? You'd applied for your master's before though.
I know. It definitely made it a lot easier then. I don't know if I would have come.
Yeah, so I finished uni last year in June,
mm-hmm.
In the middle of the pandemic, which wasn't very easy. But you had finished the year before, you finished at Birmingham, right? Yeah, what did you study?
I studied natural sciences, which is not biology, despite what everyone else assumes when they hear that. I did physics and chemistry.
Just tell us a bit about your experience after you finished. So you finished in 2019 and I finished in 2020 last year. So you finished, a year before sort of like the pandemic started. But tell us a little bit about, your experience applying for jobs in 2019. So that was before sort of everything, the world seemed to be ending, but tell us a bit about how you found the experience and whether you think Birmingham prepared you for the really tough job market that young people face at the moment.
Well, I didn't really think about applying for jobs whilst I was studying, because I kind of had like an idea in my head of just getting really good grades and then finding a job. I don't want to say easily, but like relatively easily after I finished, and that my part of like the bargain or whatever was to get the good grades, and then once I had those I would be able to take the next step. And it didn't really happen like that, so I did my exams and I passed them, and then I did see the careers people to talk about my CV, but I didn't do any interview prep. Which, I mean, I probably could have done. When I was there in Birmingham at the time, I was focused so hard on other things, I wasn't thinking about it.
I applied to jobs in final year, and it was really tough to balance applying to jobs along with final year studies, which is intense anyway. Yeah, I think different students prioritise things in different ways, and you decided to focus on your studies. But it's good that they still supported you after you finished uni.
You get 2 years after.
Oh, 2 years, yeah. It's the same at Manchester as well. But I found finishing last year was very, very overwhelming. But I feel very blessed that I found this internship here in Padua so I could come with you.
Yeah, that worked out very well.
Yes. So, yeah, let's talk a bit more about when you were applying for jobs last year and in 2019. How did you find rejections, and also in this day and age, digital day and age, which I feel like people our parents' age don't really understand, is you don't even get responses sometimes.
No, most of the time.
Which is
demoralizing. Is
exactly, yeah. Took the words right out of my mouth. Exactly,
because you spend so long trying to tailor yourself to what the job specification is, and then you don't even get anything to say like why they didn't want you, so that you can improve for other applications. Yeah, it is very depressing.
Yeah, I think that's something that a lot of people can definitely relate to our age, especially after finishing uni. And also, I feel like employers expect you to have more work experience. They just expect you to be more experienced, but you can only gain experience by being given the opportunity in the first place. So if you're not given the opportunity in the first place, how are you supposed to get work experience? It's this kind of double-edged sword.
Catch 22.
Yes. I don't know, is it double-edged sword, double-edged knife?
I think it's a catch-22.
Oh,
because
well, yeah.
A double-edged sword is like... Oh, I guess maybe.
It just sounds cool. I picture like Arthur's sword. Arthur and the round
now
table.
It's going to really annoy me. I can't remember the name of the sword.
No, I'm thinking about Merlin.
Yeah. I mean, that's not a bad place to be.
I would like people's opinions on... Do you think that...
We're talking about the BBC production.
Yeah, we're talking about the BBC series. Chelsea and I were having this discussion the other evening. Who is fitter, Merlin or Arthur Pendragon? I mean, for me, it's a no-brainer. It's obviously Arthur Pendragon.
Okay, but consider my criteria for attractiveness. Number one is intelligence. Number two is an Irish accent, which Colin Morgan has.
That is true. I do find both of those things also very attractive.
To be clear, a Southern Irish, not Northern Irish.
So specific.
Just make it extra clear.
I mean, I agree with both of those criteria, but Arthur's got that whole...
He's kind of a prick.
He is a prick, but it's so bad, but he's still so fit.
I'm not saying he's unattractive, just when I was watching it, I definitely preferred Merlin.
He wears that, like, weird scarf thing every episode and he never changes clothes. It's disgusting.
Well, I don't think they're really washed.
Yeah, that's gross as well.
Anywho.
Okay, let's stop talking about Merlin. People don't want to hear about this. Let's talk about something we were talking about earlier.
Mm.
The UK versus Italian educational system. I feel like students or graduates in the UK will find this interesting because the system here is very different. You've definitely found that. You can kind of walk us through how they're different.
Yeah. So in the UK, you start your course and it's quite clear, like, the timeline and what you have to do when. And also sort of like, if you don't do that when you're supposed to do it, like if you have to do retakes or whatever, then you get one retake generally. And your mark is capped, so you have to do the exam when it happens, except like extenuating circumstances or whatever. But in general, everybody follows a very rigid pattern, timescale. Whereas here, everyone is very relaxed, up to a point.
Yeah, and you can retake the exam as many times as you like, which is really strange.
Five times,
that's outrageous.
Yeah, so I didn't really realize, so I kind of thought I would, like, as in I knew that you could retake and do stuff like that, but I kind of went into it thinking I'm just going to treat this like the UK system and do everything now, whereas in general Italian students will prioritize from the beginning of the semester, like a certain number of credits that they actually know they're going to take the exams for in that exam season.
It's so bizarre as well, because I don't feel like that prepares you for the working world. Like half-assing it kind of.
Well, it does in a way, because you plan your own time and you learn to prioritise tasks.
Yeah, but like not really taking deadlines or exams seriously. As in, if it does an exam date, but you're like, I can just retake it whenever I want, rather than putting all your effort and eggs in that basket kind of thing.
Yeah, but equally, if you don't do the exams, then it's your time that you're going to be, I don't want to say wasting, but like using later. The longer you...
Yeah, sure, yeah.
And you'll have to stay enrolled in uni longer and pay more uni fees and stuff like that.
Yeah, I thought it was an interesting anecdote this morning. My mum told me that her cousin actually never finished his degree because he kept retaking his exam so many times. This was here in Italy, that he eventually just kind of got fed up and didn't even finish his degree, but it's his choice to keep retaking the exam. So he, on his CV, I guess, just has like a five-year sort of slot that he allocated to studying and didn't even get that piece of paper at the end of it, which is very strange.
Yeah, I mean, he can probably still talk about what he learned. He just doesn't have the paper to prove it, when he was applying for jobs, probably was less important anyway. Now degrees aren't really as valued because everyone's pushed into getting them.
Yeah, we can think. My motto for this government is education, education, education. We can quote him. That was Tony Blair. It's a tough one because I do admire wanting to educate everyone. Everyone, obviously, it's a basic. I do think, to a certain extent, in the UK as well, it's been devalued.
Massively. And people go into it thinking, I'm going to have 3 years of fun.
Yeah. And universities now have become kind of like corporate institutions, really.
Yeah.
You pay so much for it. And the Vice Chancellor of the university I graduated from last year, University of Manchester, she was quoted to have said that they're here to give you a degree, not an education.
That's a problem with exams generally, though.
Yeah, you learn for that specific aim and then your brain kind of
just forgets it.
Yeah, but I sometimes think back to my degree now and to the things that I was studying for certain exams or certain modules, and it's just out of reach. I can't quite remember it, and it's so annoying because you put so much pressure on yourself to learn for certain exams, and then your brain is so happy to have finished it that it kind of just lets it all go. Another double-edged sword of education. But yeah, tell us, so you didn't really want to do this master's, did you? It was quite a reluctant choice, but you felt kind of almost pushed into it by not being accepted by not finding a job and the job market just not being very kind to you, really.
Yes, that is accurate.
I think, yeah, many people can relate to that. I'm kind of feeling in that position right now as I consider masters, because finding jobs is tough. And I don't feel like I have enough experience.
Yeah, I think I just need more to qualify me. But then equally, I could just, like, this mindset, I'll just keep studying and then...
I do think in the long term, though, people have told me if you do have a master's, it does open doors later on in life for, like, more managerial roles or roles higher up in companies. They do require a master's. So if you've done it now rather than, like, in your late 30s when you want that job, that could be definitely beneficial.
It is a lot harder than a bachelor's.
Yeah. And with this sort of new Italian system, you might have to kind of end up finishing later than you planned, which is not wouldn't have happened in the UK. But equally,
you'll probably, if you start a master's this year, you'll be done before me.
That's wild. Yeah, but also, and I think once you've got this master's, it will be worth it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's the goal. To qualify with, or no, not qualify, to graduate with a master's and then do some office job for the rest of my working life and then retire and then, just be a cog in the machine. We're all just cogs in the machine, Frenchie.
Oh my god, Chelsea.
I think I'm becoming an anarchist.
Oh my god.
I'm just having a lot of,
You're having a full-on quarter-life crisis, I think. And we're not even 25 yet.
I know. Yeah, it's, it is what it is, as they say, which doesn't mean anything, but people say it anyway. Well, it's just to fill the space. I also don't like space being empty, so I guess it's fine to say.
Yeah, you don't deal well with awkward silences.
I have quite a lot of hang-ups, which I reason. Literally, like, the one we were talking about yesterday is when I see anyone speaking, I immediately, like, zoom in on one aspect of either their pronunciation, their body language. Keir Starmer has a really annoying head tilt.
Keir Starmer, if you're listening to this, sorry. He's definitely not listening to this.
He's not listening.
Who do I think I am?
He'll appreciate that little shout-out anyway.
We could talk about Bojo's mannerisms if you want. I mean, he has no shortage of things to talk about.
He is. But also, it's good in a way because it's a lot easier to impersonate people that have very sort of defined characteristics. And I do enjoy a good Bojo impersonation.
Yeah, that's true. His hair at the moment is not...
outrageous.
Not going great.
He's got a lot on his plate.
Surely he can just get, like, a private hairstylist at Downing Street, or like a hairdresser, just to like give it a quick trim.
No, I think he likes it like that.
You think?
Yeah, I think he's got like sort of like a bad boy, just woke up really late, had a wild.
I don't know about you, but when I look at it, I really don't think of bad boy.
But you know, like the style of like Was it called tousled? How do you say that word?
Tousled.
Is it tousled?
Okay. Tousled? I think it's tousled, actually.
I thought it was tousled.
I'm pretty sure it's not tousled.
Okay. Anyway, T-O-U-S-L-E-D. That sort of, like, just woke up like this.
Oh, it's starting to look a bit like the Trump, where I think Trump, like, sticks a bit of hair on top. And then puts it over to, like, cover the bald patch.
Mm.
I think Bojo's starting to look like that.
The comb over.
Bless him. He's aged. I mean, half bless him, because he's by no means a saint. But I do feel like he's been through one hell of a year.
Yeah, for sure.
I think COVID, like, actually getting COVID, not just the pandemic, has aged him by, like, at least 15 years.
Just being Prime Minister, like, if you look at Theresa May before and after... I mean, she didn't look... She wasn't, like...
She did have the worst...
chicken before, but...
No, still. That's true. But she did have the worst job...
Yeah, she did.
...ever. She was a Remainer tasked with Brexit. Not an ideal scenario.
No.
By
arguably, Boris's as well, though.
Yeah. True. Of course we got into politics. Why are we like this? Legit. We were like, let's not be too political. But, of course...
It's okay as long as you're critical of everyone.
Yeah.
I think that's...
For sure. What do we think of his hyperbole and, like, rhetoric? You know, he's full of metaphors and similes every day.
His rhetoric?
Yeah, his rhetoric.
They're quite annoying.
Unlike Boris, who many could argue is quite a questionable leader, here in Italy we now have an almost overqualified leader in Mario Draghi. Ex-president of the European Central Bank. I have hope for Italy in the future. I think he's going to do good things. And also, he's not a Eurosceptic at all. I think Italy was starting to go towards a sort of fairly Eurosceptic stance. I've seen that with my family as well. They don't have hope in the EU helping them, especially with the migrant crisis. Italy's felt very left out and not supported at all.
Which is entirely fair.
Yeah, fully. But I think that he... is the person to get them through this, like, also terrible economic crisis.
Yeah, for sure.
From the pandemic.
Having an economist.
People could argue he was one of the lead figures to save the euro as well during the euro crisis. So, we have hope for Italy. Speaking of Italy, actually, how have you found moving to a country and not speaking the language? Even though we should tell listeners that you do speak French and your Spanish is not too bad either. Mm. So you do have, like, a Latin language basis. But in general, how have you found moving to a country and not speaking the language?
Non-ideal, in a word. Or two words, if that's two words.
But you do understand it.
I do understand, but I can't engage. Which, if anything, I don't know if it's more frustrating. But I definitely feel like I'm not able to integrate, in a way. Like, because obviously my course is in English, so everybody that I meet and speak to now is going to be all in English. So I'm kind of just, like, in a little bubble, and my bubble happens to be in Italy rather than having actually, I don't know, become sort of integrated into the...
But you have found that the Italian groups of students are a bit cliquey, right?
Yeah, for sure. I don't really have any friends that are actually Italian, and I don't see myself having any, to be honest.
Yeah. What about...
I mean, there's people I know.
On your course. But not, like, close friends, you mean?
No. And even, like, the people that I've been meeting just since coming back now in this new semester, they're also all internationals. Which also makes sense in a way, because other international students will sort of be feeling more left out as well.
Yeah.
And be a lot keener to form new bonds. Whereas a lot of the people that are on my course studied here for their bachelor's anyway. So, and possibly live nearby as well. So they're way less, I don't want to say needy, but it is sort of a need for connections.
I've just realised that we haven't actually said what you're studying, and I think that this is important. So, you're studying...
Physics of data.
Yes, and you are a woman, as people can probably tell because she's called Chelsea, and because from our voices. I don't know if I have a manly voice, but anyway.
I've been told I have a very high voice.
Oh. Yeah, actually, someone said that to me the other day about you. They actually did. They were like, Chelsea has a really high voice. And I was like...
In your head, your voice sounds like several... I don't know how much, but it sounds lower than it is out.
Really?
Yeah. Because of, like, the way that the audio vibrates through your bones in your head.
Such a you comment. She's really, really dorky if you can't tell. So how have you found being a woman in a very, very male-dominated subject, sector, industry, any of those words apply to
this? I don't want to say it's like harder necessarily because other people would be fine, but I think because of like in general I'm kind of like less likely to put forward my opinions, like nothing to do with science, but in general my personality is a lot less confident.
Yeah.
And then if I'm in a setting where then it's generally all men talking about physics concepts, then I'm even less likely to put my opinions forward. And actually, I was thinking this the other day, I've never felt, like in conversations where I feel like I know what I'm talking about, I've never felt like I know what I'm talking about in physics.
Really?
Yeah.
You always sound to me like you know what you're talking about in like any subject that you talk about.
If we're talking about something like history or politics, I guess, as well, I feel sort of, like, confident in my grounding and, like, I could argue my viewpoint. But I feel like if I was talking about physics with someone that genuinely understood it and they asked me, like, to describe some of the basic concepts, I would immediately...
Yeah, I guess that's quite a big question as well. I mean, it depends how specific certain physics topic it is. Interesting. Well, hopefully this master's will prepare you more for a job in what will undoubtedly be very male-dominated. Do you think?
Yeah, I feel like...
Your confidence will grow, hopefully, over the course of the master's.
And also it makes it harder, obviously... because not everyone's in Padova, like, geographically. So we have to do calls on Zoom. And just stuff like having to screen share and not be able to point when you want to talk about stuff makes it harder to collaborate.
Yeah, I guess studying in a pandemic when you've got group work is not the easiest with Zoom and stuff.
Yeah.
I guess we have to be grateful that we do have all this technology that can help us stay connected.
Yeah, no, definitely, like, it makes it a lot easier than what makes it possible, which is really good. But it is harder than it should be in an ideal world, if there was such a thing.
Wait, what was the question? Whether you feel like this master's is going to prepare you more for a very male-dominated sex
world. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was going to say, like, even in my head, and I try and, like, change my preconceived ideas about sort of scientists or whatever. But in my head, when I picture a programmer or a data scientist...
You don't picture a woman?
No.
Yeah. But we have been raised with sort of masculine concepts of job roles and stuff.
Yeah.
That men are in those jobs and that's just the way it is, which is... It's changing. There are more... You've got one female lecturer this semester, am I right?
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Pretty exciting.
Yeah, very exciting. I think we have like internalized, yeah, sexism and like internalized views of what jobs men and women can do. And that is something that we need to work on and that teachers need to work on in teaching the next generation as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not sure that when we were at school, people made a massive effort to be like, this job can be a man and a woman. Do you think?
A bit. I remember being told at primary school, like, that it was supposed to be police officer, not policeman.
Yeah.
What is it for fire? Man.
I don't know. Fire. Officer, fire. Maybe responder? No?
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know.
I'm not sure.
The fact that we don't know that literally proves our point. Ugh, it's a tough world. Well, speaking of gender roles and gender... How are we feeling about Women's Day on Monday? I know that by the time this podcast is out, Women's Day will have passed, but it's for everyone, so that everyone knows it's on the 8th of March.
Mm-hmm.
And I personally, think it's a good day to champion women's efforts and raise awareness, but my colleagues have a very different, well, not very different view, but they believe that it's sad that this day should even exist in the first place, because it only needs to be a day because we still don't have equality. And I read yesterday it's like something like 2.7 billion women still don't have the same access to the jobs that men do in this world. 2.7 billion women, that is a lot.
That's most of the women.
And also that less than 25% of politicians in the world are women, and one in three women suffer sexual assault and sexual abuse.
In their lifetimes, right?
Yes, in the world.
Yeah.
And in Italy, the statistics are that a woman every 3 days is killed, and that's femicide, and 61% is by a partner or ex-partner. So the statistics aren't great, even I say, like, in quotation marks or whatever, in the West, where people think that things are a lot better, they're still not great, but all over the world it's not ideal. And my colleagues believe that Women's Day is just sad that it even needs to exist.
But the being sad that it needs to exist doesn't, like, in if anything, proves the need for it to exist even more.
I think that too. I think it's a good day to sort of post about people you appreciate and people that you admire, women that have smashed all sorts of obstacles to get to where they are, particularly in countries where they face innumerable obstacles.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's good, but my colleagues, we're writing quite a ragey Facebook post for work, which I think is good. It's good to have anger.
Big fan. Let's make all the days Women's History Day.
We've been chatting for a while, and I think it's been a constructive chat, but should we end on, since this podcast is about young people, thinking, let's finish on, what would you say is the best and worst thing about being a young person in this ultra-connected digital age that we're living in?
Interesting. Okay. I think the worst thing is, I know, I'm going to say the best and worst thing is social media, because in one way it brings people together that would never be able to find each other, like marginalised communities, people that are growing up in environments where they're very different to everyone around them. It allows them to connect with people who are going through similar situations, and in that way you don't feel as alone, and you're aware of support groups, and you can find things that you need when you need them.
Yeah.
But that's also, this is definitely a double-edged sword, because I also see it kind of as like a huge social experiment, in that we don't know what the impact of it is going to be on people as they grow up, and already things like eating disorders and stuff. And TikTok, the stuff that's on TikTok, is horrendous. And it seems to, like, get younger and younger. The people that are affected by, like, body standards is, what I mean, everyone, like, girls and boys as well. And it just seems to get younger and younger, and I just don't see it ending well.
Yeah. And also, we, I think, were sheltered to a certain extent, like, computers were a thing when we were children, but they were the big fat ones that people didn't really go on loads. But now, really young kids have iPads, phones, from when they're genuinely before they're teenagers, whereas I got a flip phone when I was 11. And it's just a whole different ball game now, I think.
I think I got my first phone when I was 13, I think. But then a smartphone when I was like 16, maybe 17. And my little sister had already had, like, the iPhone, I don't know, 7 when she was 16.
Yeah, same with my sister. My sister's 6 years younger than me. So I'm 23 and my sister is now, she's just turned 18. But yeah, she's had, like, a proper smartphone 4 years now. And I didn't.
And, like, having Facebook accounts when you're really young And
I mean, now I think actually stuff like TikTok's more damaging than Facebook in terms of what you're being fed.
Yeah.
You scroll through these videos of people that are like all loved up and women that really don't have realistic bodies. It's all a lot. Yeah, I agree. I think social media is a force for good and also a very damaging force.
And also the shaming that happens on it as well.
Yeah.
Like I've seen video, Danae Mercer that we were talking about yesterday. Yeah. She occasionally posts them on her Instagram. I don't have TikTok because I don't want to give my information willingly to the Chinese government.
Yeah, but
They'll get it through some other back doorway, but I'm not giving it as easily. And yeah, she occasionally posts videos on her Instagram of some of the posts that she's seen that she wants that she's complained about on the platform, but also to show people how bad it is.
Yeah, and she shows people how influencers position their bodies to look a certain way and how that means that the bodies aren't realistic at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there was just one that I remember like really clearly, and it was like a 14-year-old boy, and he was going through pictures of girls on his phone, or like going like showing them on the screen and judging their bodies in like a very, very sexually aggressive way.
Yeah.
And I was like, if you're like a 13-year-old girl on there and you see that.
Whereas now they're just fed it all on their phone. It's, yeah, it's scary. Yeah. So you think social media's best and worst thing?
Hmm.
I guess this would answer the question in the intro where I say, is social media turning our brains to mush? And it's like a yes or no answer, yeah. Isn't it? It's not really clear cut at all.
You have to be very careful how you use it.
Yeah, it's a force for massive good. And I guess in the last few years, we've seen how conspiracy theories thrive, those kind of communities on the internet, which is massively damaging.
Yeah, yeah. You can have the example of the QAnon group, and then you could also have like the Arab Spring.
Yeah.
Which are essentially, like, if you take out what the belief system behind it is, they both united people with a common goal.
Yeah.
And actually brought around physical change in the world.
Yeah. Well, the former's sort of almost shattering democracy and the latter's sort of begging for it, isn't it? Yeah. Interesting. On that note, I feel like we've given people lots of interesting things to think about. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening to my first episode of 20s Questions. I look forward to presenting you all with different guests in the coming weeks and months. Guests from all over the world, as I've already said. I'm talking about all sorts of topics that affect young people in this wild age we're living through. Thank you so much. Chelsea, do you want to say goodbye?
Goodbye.